Attention, attention all personnel. It's MASHcast.
Hello and welcome to MASHcast, the show that analyzes and celebrates episode by episode the greatest TV series of all time, MASH, which aired on CBS from 1972 to 1983. Proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. I'm your host, General Robert Iron Guts Kelly. And joining us this week in the VIP tent is Lieutenant Brad Dade. Hi, Brad.
Hi, how you doing? Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I'm glad to have you here.
I'm really looking forward to this one for maybe some surprising reasons tonight.
Ooh, okay. We're here to talk about season 6, episode 22, Potter's Retirement. It originally aired on February 20th, 1978. And before we get into the details of this episode, Brad, since you're new to the show, I have to ask you how you became a fan of MASH.
Well, and I apologize to your listeners in advance because this might come off as long-winded. But so I was born in 74, and I probably started watching the show around 1980. And my dad got me onto the show. And I don't know if he was watching the whole time or not, but I just remember that's when we started watching it. And, you know, we live in Canada, but we were actually fortunate to be living across from Detroit, Michigan, because we got the American TV channels. So we were able to watch MASH in syndication and, you know, watch a lot of it. And when we got our first VCR, and if having a VCR makes you sound old, our VCR was so old, it didn't have a remote. But what it had was it had a cord that was attached to the VCR. And on the other end was a button like a plunger. And the point of that button was to pause recording so you could edit things out. So my dad decided he wanted to start recording every episode of MASH and collect them. And my job was to press that button for commercials. And a picture, a 6 to 7 year old working this button like I'm defusing a bomb with seconds to go. I'm just getting worked up. I'm just like, I got to the point where I knew around the 12 minute mark, the 22 minute mark, and the 27 minute mark was approximately when there was going to be a commercial. So we record these episodes. And then once we had them, we'd watch on a Sunday afternoon. My dad would throw a tape in. You know, he usually would fall asleep and I'd just sit there and binge episode by episode. And like, that's some of my fondest memories when I was really little. And then some point in the 80s, you know, I don't know why life gets in the way. We just stopped watching them. I just didn't watch any MASH for a long time. Maybe the odd episode here and there, but it wasn't a regular thing. I might have watched a few when my dad started collecting them on DVD in the late 90s, early 2000s, but whenever those came out. But I didn't really pay attention to the show much. And then you started a little podcast. And I'm a friend, you know, I'm a fan of the Fire and Water Network. And I enjoy the work you guys do. And I'm always looking for, as much as I love comic books and comic book podcasts, I'm always looking for something a little different. So I started listening to your show, and considering I hadn't watched the episodes in decades, and at that time, I did not have any access to watch them, I was amazed at the second you started talking about any episode, giving the synopsis, I would instantly remember like 90% of the episode, like I watched it yesterday. And I was really enjoying that for the first two seasons of your podcast. And then Disney here in Canada, Disney Plus, got it. And I've been loving watching it on there. It looks amazing in HD. So now I only allow myself to watch whatever episode you're reviewing for that week. I'm not letting myself binge ahead. Although I will, just to backtrack, say my dad and I had the idea of binge watching shows decades before it became the cool thing to do. I will say that. So now I'm watching MASH regularly and loving every minute of it.
I love that it was a team effort between you and your dad to record them. Like, you're like the, I don't know if you've seen Oppenheimer yet, but there's a scene of Oppenheimer with somebody else, and the guy is going to be like literally the one who pushes the button. That's you there. Like, okay. Oh, it's starting to fade. Oh, shoot. That's the scene transition. Oh, darn. Okay.
I probably at that age took it as serious as Oppenheimer took that as serious.
That is so cool. Now, is there any chance, I'm guessing not, that the tapes have survived, or would they all dispose
of? Oh, no. They went the way of the dodo long ago. And then my dad started collecting them all, the box sets as they came out each season. And I'm not even quite sure if he still has those. Although it's funny, the other day we were talking, he just got Disney Plus for himself and he didn't realize MASH was on there.
Oh,
and wow, now okay. He's losing his mind. We had a good talk about it the other day and he's like, oh yeah, I'm watching like several episodes a day. Like, I'm just loving this.
That's really sweet. I love it. That's
fantastic.
Yeah. I it's so funny. Like, we're all so eager to, in the moment, to get rid of clutter, or at least most of us are. Okay. Except for those people on that hoarder show that we watch every so often. But like most of us, you know, like, VHS tapes, who needs those? And you check them out because DVDs are the new thing. I would kill to have some of my old MASH tapes back. Love that. That would be just one, just to see the commercials I recorded or what my editing choices were to fit as many episodes into a 6-hour tape. Oh, by the way, do you remember, where was your dad? Super like high fidelity guy. Was it like, did you record on the best speed or was it the slowest speed to get as much in there as you could?
It was whatever we could get in there. We're not, I'm making us sound more techno savvy than we are. So we just used with whatever we had.
That is so cool. Oh my God. I love it. I love that. I just love that image of a little kid sitting on the couch maintaining. You must have had an early VCR that it was connected with a wire. That's,
oh yeah. Like I said, that was probably like, I would say probably 1980, around there.
Yeah.
Cause we were recording them because the final episode was in the, it was in 83.
Right.
So we were recording them at least for a couple of years before that. Cause I remember that. Cause the majority of the time I was watching them in syndication, and I remember Thursday nights were the new episode. So we watched the final episode like everyone else did the night it came out. So it felt weird for me to kind of jump ahead to watch the final episode when I was still kind of watching them in syndication and those were behind. But
that is so cool. I love it. I absolutely love that story. Well, congratulations to you and your dad. I'm sure your dad will probably be really pleased that you're on a MASH podcast, right? At some point.
Is going to be a surprise for him. I haven't told him I'm doing it. So.
Oh, very cool. All right. Well, okay. Brad's dad, welcome. I hope you enjoy what you're about to hear. So, all right. As I mentioned, we're here to talk about the 22nd episode of season 6, Potter's Retirement. It was written by Lawrence Marks, longtime MASH writer. Lawrence Marks, this, I should mention, is his final script for MASH. He wrote 28 MASHes across 4 seasons. This is his last script for the show and directed by a longtime cinematographer, William Jurgensen. So the plot is as such. Colonel Potter has a meeting with his friend General Kent, who tries to dance around some bad news he has to deliver. He's been receiving bad reports about the 477, specifically about Colonel Potter's leadership. Potter isn't especially concerned until Kent tells him that some of these bad reports are coming directly from the 477th. This hits Potter hard. He is hurt that some of his own family have been saying bad things behind his back. Later, Colonel Potter returns to the camp to find the doctor's Kentucky Derby party, which Potter approved of earlier, is in full swing early. He barges into the mess tent, barking at all of them, even yelling at Radar. He ends the party then and there, leaving everyone in stunned silence. Back in his office, Radar tries to delicately ask Potter what's wrong, but he won't say. Radar tells him that a memo from I Corps came in saying that there's going to be an inspection in a few days, not the news Potter wants to hear. Later, at the Kentucky Derby party, Potter walks in and tells everyone about the inspection. He says he wants to show the pencil pushers that the 477th is the best damn unit in Korea, much to the cheers of everyone. He then drops a bombshell. After the inspection, he's transferring out, spending his last year in active service in the States. Hawkeye and BJ follow Potter back to his office, demanding to know what's going on. At first, he refuses to say, but when they persist, he tells them about the bad reports. Leaving them alone in his office with Radar, the doctor resolved to find out who the snitch is. Radar thinks it's maybe Klinger, but Hawkeye and BJ have another, more likely candidate, Winchester. They sneak through Winchester's stuff, looking for any incriminating material, but he catches them in the act, protesting his innocence. He then suggests that they look through the outgoing mail for any letter addressed to I Corps. With Radar's help, they go through all the outgoing mail and find one from a Sergeant Benson, who Radar says is a regular Joe, mail to I Corps. They open it with Radar's expert precision and find that it is, in fact, Benson who is the culprit. After a session in OR, they confront him and present Benson to Potter. After some harsh words, Benson reveals that he was sent there as a sort of spy. He's even a lieutenant, not a sergeant, on the orders of a General Webster, who had a grudge against the 477th in general and Potter specifically. Benson thought that military discipline is loose, too loose, at the 477th, hence the bad reports. Potter is disgusted and orders Benson out. Later, he calls his old friend General Kent and asks him to call off the inspection. He's then asked if he's staying at the 477th, a question he doesn't have an answer for. After he hangs up, Hawkeye, BJ, and Radar beg Potter to stay. Hawkeye even calls him Sherman. Potter thinks for a moment and agrees to stay. Right at that moment, they hear choppers coming, and as they all run out, Potter mutters, "I hate this place." Okay, Brad, before we talk about the details of this specific episode, since you're new to the show, what is your favorite, if you have one, era of MASH? Is it the earlier seasons? Is it that kind of midpoint, the Potter Frank years, or is it more this stuff, the Winchester era?
I feel like I'm getting into my favorite now. I feel like as I get older, I enjoy more the dramedy, leaning towards drama that MASH becomes in later seasons. I mean, I love the early seasons too. Don't get me wrong. It's all great. But watching this, especially watching this season while following the podcast, I didn't realize before how much I really like Winchester. And I think he's a great addition to the show. I like that we're starting, there's still humor, but we're seeing that transition that I'm sure everyone talks about. So I really feel like I'm actually getting into my favorite era now.
All right. A lot of people have said that this season. I mean, that might be a natural outgrowth of some people coming onto the show for the first time because they waited until they got to their favorite era to come talk about. Yeah. So that might make a lot of sense. But yeah, Winchester, a lot of people really liked Winchester. Again, not that I should be surprised at that. He's a great character. David Ogden Stiers played him really well. The show moved into a different kind of era. You know, it moved away from kind of the more broad comedy, sort of. I mean, you know, they would do some broad stuff later on, but it definitely increased the drama a little bit. And so, yeah, people really seem to really enjoy this section of MASH, which is fantastic. So this episode opens out on the compound where Potter is getting ready for his trip. And everyone's in kind of good spirits. Hawkeye is giving Potter all sorts of advice about where to stay. He mentions you want to stay in Uncle Chang's Shangri-La Hotel. I love that Potter says, "What's so good about it except the name?" And of course, Hawkeye's like, "Well, the bellboys are all girls." So yeah, this is the kind of place that Potter would not be staying at. And, you know, it's all just kind of all in good fun. And then just as Potter's getting ready to leave, Radar mentions the Kentucky Derby party. And he says, Hawkeye and BJ throwing it, it's going to be real wingding. And he says, everyone has to show up in jockey shorts. And Colonel Potter, you know, finally has to do a little bit of kerneling. And he says, change that to nobody. And he says it very gently, but he's definitely firm. Change that to nobody. And I love Radar. His little mouth is quivering and he's like, not even the nurses, sir. And Potter goes, not even. Like, he's kind of taking that seriously. I'm like, no. Like, that's getting out of hand. He can't have everybody showing up in their jockey shorts.
So is it okay if I kind of say something harsh about Radar early in this episode?
Sure. Okay.
So it opens with him. And then it's funny watching the season and following up the podcast, I didn't notice until you guys kept talking about it, how much Radar is not in this season.
Right, right, right.
And then when it opens with him here, I had this weird thought. I'm like, you know, like, nothing against Gary Berghoff. He's been great. I know he has some great stuff coming up. But I'm like, you know what? I don't miss Radar this season. Like, the episodes he's not in, I'm fine with it. Like, I'm actually ready to move. I know he leaves, but I'm actually already ready for him to leave.
Yeah, I mean, Jamie Farr more than adequately filled the space. You know, I've been very complimentary of him all season because the stuff they've given Klinger to do has filled that Radar space. I mean, again, he's not exactly the same character, obviously, but mm-hmm. he really stepped up and he was very, very funny and he had some great dramatic moments. So, yeah, we know that it was in Berghoff's contract that he was allowed to kind of be out for good chunks of the season because he just felt he was sort of burnt out on playing this character. And, you know, that's actually kind of a service to the writers because it gives them the chance to say, well, let's see, how can we write the show without this character? And we can use him occasionally, but it gives us a chance to kind of, you know, get up to speed. You know, most of the time when a character leaves, they just leave. And then you're starting over. But I, you know, they had a chance to kind of say, all right, let's ramp everybody up a little bit. And I think that the episodes that Radar's in the season, he gets more to do, which is natural. But I agree with you. The ones he's not in, I'm not like, oh man, I really wish Radar had been in this one. Like, they really did a good job of kind of, you know, writing him out of the show.
Agreed.
So Potter takes off and then he heads to General Kent's office. General Kent is played by the character actor Peter Hobbs. He passed away in 2011. He was in a ton of movies and TV. He had like hundreds of credits. He was in Steve Martin's The Man with Two Brains. He was in The Andromeda Strain, Woody Allen's Sleeper, 9 to 5. He also did a lot of voice work. He was in both Heavy Traffic and Nine Lives of Fritz the Cat, two adult-oriented, X-rated cartoons from the 70s. And, you know, you look at this guy, and he's like Colonel Potter's age, and you're like, wow, he was in kind of these hip X-rated cartoons. Like, good for you, Peter Kent. Peter Hobbs, you know? So he's General Waldo Kent, as it says here on his desk. And so they have this nice meeting. And then finally, Kent says, you know, there's a lot of reports coming, and they're coming from your unit. And there's a whole angle here that the show never really mined before, and they would later on, is that, like, you know, I'm sure Colonel Potter has to fend off a lot of internal army politics in running the unit. We never see that because he keeps his people, he keeps his people secure from all that stuff. But he must deal with all sorts of army brass that is like, wow, what the hell's Potter doing down there? How's he running his unit? He's not running his unit. Who's this Pierce guy who's always causing trouble? And, you know, Potter being a great commander, he never lets any of his people really hear about that. And I think that's kind of an interesting angle that we're finally hearing that, yeah, Potter is fending off a lot of this stuff, and especially to this level where it's getting really intense.
What I found interesting about that is that's a great point. Because they used to, in the early seasons, try to justify them getting away with stuff as, oh, they have a 98% success rate. Hockey can never be replaced. So every time they were getting in trouble, they would suddenly need to do a surgery to prove how good they were. And then the brass would back off. But I feel like that excuse would get thin after a while. And there'd be some people in the military that wouldn't care if you're the best surgeon in the world. If you're not towing the army line, they're not going to be happy with that. So you're right. It's interesting. Yeah. Potter would have to be the one, because I don't think Henry Blake would have done a good job of that.
No.
But I think Potter, because of his experience and who he knows, and in that, you're right. There's probably all kinds of, he probably has so many phone calls a day dealing with stuff like, yes, I know Hawkeye went and did that. Yes, I know. I'll talk to him. Sure, I will. He won't do that again. Fingers crossed. You know, he probably, yeah, it's like a typical manager in some businesses. It's like you're dealing with a lot of silly stuff because you don't want your workers to have to deal with that. You want them to focus on their job.
Right. Totally. I mean, Henry Blake was always afraid of Margaret and Frank going over his head because he knew he would probably get in trouble. Potter doesn't have that problem because he said he's got a more established career and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But yeah. Yeah. And so I thought that was, and you know, there's this line that Kent has where he says, Sherm, you're in your last year. Let's make it an easy one. I can transfer you to any stateside post, you name it. And it's kind of like, isn't that amazing that, like, he could, if he wanted to, not be in Korea, not be in a war zone, and somehow he's managed to convince Mildred that that's okay. You know, like, he's like, I mean, if he really has that kind of pull, maybe he can't be transferred to back home to, like, you know, his literally, like, within, you know, his home state, but he could be back in the U.S. and yet somehow he's choosing to be in Korea. I mean, I guess the idea is Mildred knew who she was marrying. He's an army guy, but it is kind of funny that it's like, yes, I am choosing to be on the other side of the planet from you to fill out my final year in service.
So two things about that. One, I'm going to talk about that more later because that ties into a very pivotal scene that is the reason I wanted to talk about this episode. But also found funny when they said you're in your last year. Little did they know that last year would last 5 more seasons. Yeah.
The whole episode would encapsulate 1 year in the show. And yet somehow, yeah, this is the longest year anybody's ever had.
Army years are different.
Yeah. So Potter, he mentions to Kent, you know, this is not just the 477 is not just a collection of people. They're my family. And until recently, I thought was a loyal family. And then he asks Kent, you know, he's like, this is good hooch, but you got any rot gut? So obviously, yeah, he's in a really bad mood. So then we're back at the 477, and everyone is preparing for the Kentucky Derby party. They're having Margaret is having a debate with a chef who is a wounded soldier who obviously knows how to bake. He's got like a chef's hat on. This guy, the character's name is Denning. He's played by an actor named Ken White. He was on a lot of TV like Monk, Star Trek Enterprise, Melrose Place, Super Train, and 2 episodes of Aftermath. I'm sure not playing the same character.
No.
although that would have been awesome.
Yeah.
But the whole bit is that Margaret is arguing about the cake and about the grass because she wants, you know, I want green on the cake. It's Kentucky Derby. And the guy's like, first of all, Kentucky grass is blue. Arguing, and she's kind of arguing for the lime icing, and he even says, Major, I'm not even supposed to be here. I've been held over so I could bake a cake. And Margaret is offended by that. And then they post, you know, Hawkeye says, post op is half empty. What's the difference? This guy taught at the Cordon Bleu, and of course you realize that's a lie. You know, he's making that up entirely. So yeah, Potter is Hawkeye is certainly bending the rules. Then Zale comes in with some decoration, and we see standing next to him another character who we will find out who that is later on in the episode. BJ tests out some of the booze, and apparently it's quite strong. Then Potter comes back, and he is in absolutely no mood. And Klinger is dressed, is doing a bit as an MP, and Potter is just barking at him and having absolutely no time for any of this. And the length of his fury is so great that when he runs into Father Mulcahy, he says, how was your trip? We certainly missed you around here. Potter does not even break stride and just goes, save it for Sunday. Which is, wow. we know this is bad. And then they hold on Mulcahy, who looks absolutely baffled. We hear off screen, everybody start singing because the party has started. And we see Potter come out and march angrily into the mess tent because obviously he is in absolutely no mood. And one of the things about this episode, this is the first show of something I think MASH would do every season, which I call the Angry Potter episodes, where something happens to Colonel Potter. He gets super mad and doesn't tell anyone why. And so for a good chunk of the episode, he's barking at our regulars. So they did it this season. They did it next season in Point of View. They did it in season 8 in Too Many Cooks. They did it in Pressure Points. They did it in Settling Debts. Every season they had an Angry Potter episode. And, we all love Colonel Potter so much. It's deeply upsetting. I don't like to see him yelling at everybody. I like to see them getting along. And Harry Morgan sells it really well, but it's so unpleasant. Like to see him yelling at all these people we love.
Well, I'll tell you, when he yells at Radar, the way he barks and the way the camera, I don't know if it shook or they kind of zoomed in a little, it made me scared. Like, I was like, oh, if he yelled at me like that, I'd be shirking the way Radar does. And I think Harry Morgan does a great job this episode. He's probably, to me, the best part of the episode. Seeing his anger side, you're right. I think they keep going back to it because he just does such a good job of it. And it just shows that, you know, this guy's got a huge long history of dealing in the war. He's not, you know, he's of a different generation. He's not like even like Hawkeye and them that like to say whatever they want because they're younger and they're a different generation. Potter's old school. They hold things in way too long. You can even argue Hawkeye is not really a typical 1950s male either. But no, I love, like I said, I actually really found it. I don't want to see them all yelling. They're all nice people, but or getting yelled at. But on the other hand, I just thought it was Harry Morgan did such a great job of an angry Potter. I was like, I could kind of see more of this.
Yeah. I mean, this is, we'll go through it. I mean, there's a lot of really funny lines in this show.
Oh yeah.
This one scene where he is yelling, first of all, he yells at Margaret, rats out Hawkeye and BJ and says that, you know, they've kept this guy so he could bake a cake, and Potter gets mad and he says, I can't stand two commissioned teenagers who act like they could break rules whenever they want. And Margaret goes like, darn tootin'. And then Potter goes, but what's worse is a snitch, someone who can't settle something face to face. And she says, I resent that, Colonel. And he goes, tough. I'm like, well, oh my God.
Well, think about it for a second. Potter just felt betrayed because somebody in his unit is saying bad things about him to the brass. So Potter is comparing Margaret to what he's going through. He's like, oh, instead of wanting to deal with me face to face, this person wrote letters to ICOR.
Yeah.
So right, yeah. He sees Margaret's being a rat. He's taking it personal.
Yeah. Oh, calling her a snitch, though. Oh,
man. Yeah. Oh, it's harsh. It's harsh, rough. But I can kind of see what brought that on in him.
Yeah. Right. And I mean, she's only complaining mostly because the guy won't listen to her. It's not even that right. She's complaining that, well, about what they did. It's really more that he's kind of on Hawkeye and BJ's side, sort of in this little weird little cake debate that they're having. But then, as you mentioned, the coup de grace of the scene is that Radar comes in and he's got party favors and he's like, look, I made little horses and jockeys on the hats. And off screen, we don't see it. We hear Potter go, where the hell have you been? Well, and then they cut to him for a second. And then we cut back to Radar and the camera just sits on him. It doesn't. First of all, in the first shot, it zooms in a little. And then when they come back to him, it just sits there. And Berghoff is terrific in this scene. I mean, part of it, of course, it's Radar. Yelling at Radar is like kicking a puppy. And I just love he's like, I had to go to supply to get the paper. And I had to go find a picture to know how. Like, he's such like a little stuttering kid. And it's really... it's really uncomfortable, really uncomfortable. And that you're like, what? You're that angry that you would yell at poor little Radar? That is just absolutely brutal. And then he ends the party. He's like, that's it. And he blows the whole thing up and everyone is like, you know, demoralized. What the hell was that? And then, of course, what's the worst thing to happen to Potter when he gets back to his office? Winchester is waiting for him. Absolutely the last person he wants to see. And Winchester is there because he says it has been 6 months to the day that since you've shanghaied me here. And he's like, you haven't lifted a finger to help me get out of here. And Potter just starts drinking. He's not even really paying attention to him. And then Winchester makes some reference to wanting to get out of there. And Potter says something to the effect of, oh, I bet you've already started, haven't you? Which to me makes he's assuming that it's Winchester that's doing this because he's sort of saying, oh, okay, you've already, and Winchester, of course, has no idea what he's talking about, you know, cause he said, Winchester says, I'll stop at nothing. And he's like, we're already on your way, aren't you? And, again, this part is more obviously easier to take because Winchester can take it. It's not Radar, but it gets so heated that Potter actually picks up his nameplate and basically threatens to hit Winchester with it. And there's this great bit of body language where Winchester kind of rises up as the nameplate is under his chin. And he goes, oh, Colonel, there's no reason to get huffy. And he just marches out. And you're like, oh, man, like, this has really gotten out of hand.
Well, you know what's funny about that scene? One, he's getting mad at the Colonel for not lifting a finger to get him out. The Colonel, the entire season, has never even made it sound like he was going to try to get him out of there. Matter of fact, it was Potter's idea to transfer him there permanently.
Yep.
So I don't know why Winchester thinks that Potter was going to help him. The other really funny thing I found in that scene was we know MASH's continuity is, let's just say, wonky.
Casual.
Thank you. Winchester mentions, because he's upset because he saw an article about the very first successful open heart surgery.
Right. That should be my heart there. Yeah.
Now, I Googled this information just for curiosity, and we know the internet never lies, but I came across something interesting. The first successful open heart surgery was not in the 1950s, even at whatever year in the early 50s they want to say it is. According to the internet, the first one was completed in 1893. So I think Charles is a little off. I think that article he's reading is a little old.
I saw that myself, and not that the internet is not a completely reliable source of information at all times, but it was, that seemed unbelievable to me that I decided that I was like, that can't be right. Right. That 18. Yeah. How? Well,
you probably read the same thing I read, but it said they performed open heart surgery on a human. They did it without x-rays, antibiotics, surgical prep work, or tools of modern surgery. And the guy survived.
Yeah, I can't. I mean, for how long, you know? Like, I don't know. Yeah. I don't understand. I just did not. I read it and I just went, I can't wrap my head around that. That just can't be right. And so I was like, well, Okay. All right. But yeah, I mean, I love the idea that Winchester somehow thought that Potter was now, what, this time going to do it? Like, yeah. Oh, okay. After 6 months of turning you down. Oh, by the way, you're talking about a long year. It's been 6 months. And yet Winchester will be here for five more seasons. He's got a lot more time ahead of him. Radar shows up, tells him that there's some mail from I Corps, and Potter's like, what did it say? And Radar's like, I don't read your mail. And he's like, what did it say? And then he finally says there's an inspection coming, which of course is not the last thing Potter wants to hear. And then there's finally a little bit of crack in the dam where Radar says, you know, are you okay, sir? And, or, you know, is there anything I can do, sir? And Potter finally softens a little and he says, no, you know, just keep your mouth shut about the inspection. And he's finally realizing whoever was the snitch, it's not Radar. It's clearly not Radar. So, okay, let's calm down a little. And so then that's him. It ends with him sitting at his desk. Then we cut to later and the Kentucky Derby party is in full swing, which seems insane to me. Like, you couldn't read the room, guys, that clearly Potter was not in the mood for that. I know he didn't officially end the party. He was ending it early, but I would just think maybe we shouldn't do this with Colonel Potter in the mood that he's in. I'm not Hawkeye. I know I'm not a rule breaker like him, but it did seem a little crazy that everyone would dress up knowing Potter is in this mood that he's in.
Well, the other thing that threw me off was, and they established earlier, and I know it's because of the time change, the party was going to be at 1:30 in the morning. And to me, I'm like, I couldn't go to a party at 1:30 in the morning. I just can't do it.
Right.
They're
right,
all awake.
Who's on duty here? Who's in post-op?
Yeah, but you're right. Read the room, guys. Obviously.
Even Margaret's there. You know, like, I didn't think Margaret would not be there. By the way, Hawkeye has got a kind of like Colonel Sanders white mustache and beard. But if you look closely, BJ also has a fake mustache early. Of course, he'd grow the mustache in the season from now. But we see he's got a kind of a little pencil thin mustache going on.
So IMDb, trust at your peril, mentions that and says this is the first time BJ has, even if it's a fake mustache, but it's the first time you see it on screen, which of course we know he will grow an amazing mustache in later seasons.
Yeah, I think it looks good. I like it. I actually prefer this mustache to the big bushy one that he grew in season 7. But anyway, everyone is there. Zale is there. The chef is there. The bakery guy is there. Nurse Bigelow is there, because I mentioned this is her big season. Then Potter barges in and has them turn the radio off. And he mentions there's going to be an inspection coming, but the inspections haven't bothered us. You know, we're going to be, they're going to see that we're the best damn unit. They want efficiency. I'm going to show them efficiency and pride. Everything it says we haven't got. And everyone's like, yay. You know, it's like a rousing speech. This place is going to be so clean. You can operate on it. We're going to be the best damn MASH unit in the Army, the best unit, period. It's just getting, you know, it's a total Newt Rockney kind of thing. But then he drops the bomb. Right after that, I'm going home. Like, what? You heard me. I'm leaving. After this, I'm going to be sent. I'm going to go home stateside. And that's our big bomb of an act break.
Yeah. And, well, look, I know he's mad and I know he's there to make a point. But they're there to listen to the Kentucky Derby, and he has them turn it off right when the episode, right when they're about to listen to it.
I don't know how long the race was this year. Maybe they could get to catch it in the middle or something. I don't know.
I don't know.
He doesn't talk that long. You know what I mean? So I don't know how long the average horse race is. then we come back for act two, and we're in Potter's office and he is giving some orders. He tells Klinger to stop dressing like an MP. Klinger has a great line where he's like, if you don't mind, sir, I'd like to keep my whistle. and then he's talking to Zale and Benson, which is the aforementioned new character. As I mentioned, he's played by George Weiner, who at this point has 211 separate credits on IMDb. If you watched any television in the 70s and 80s, you saw this guy. All in the Family, Alice, Quincy, Soap, WKRP, The Rockford Files, Charlie's Angels, The Bob Newhart Show, Mannix. The one movie credit most people probably know him from is he is in Fletch. He is Fletch's ex-wife's lawyer, the one, the Arnold T. Pants Esquire. he's the one waiting for Fletch in his apartment when Fletch comes back and crawls in through the window. And he always generally played kind of officious guys or nerdy guys. He had kind of like a bookish look. So yeah, this is just yet another show that he racked up an appearance on.
When I was watching this episode, the credit he had that came to mind right away was about a year ago, I binge watched Hill Street Blues. And he has a reoccurring character on that show as a district attorney.
Perfect. Yeah. Yeah, totally. Yeah. The guy was just in everything. Everything, everything. It's kind of, I know there are documentaries about character actors, but like, I've never read an interview with this guy. I'd love to know what his life is like. Cause I mean, he's probably just met everybody. He's probably worked with everybody at this point. I mean, by the way, for people who don't like spend a lot of time looking at IMDb like I do, cause I'm a nerd. When I say someone has 211 credits, right? That if they're on, like you just mentioned Hill Street Blues, right? If say he was on 10 of those on IMDb at the top, that counts as one credit. They don't count that. So like he has 211 separate credits. And then so if he did, you know, three episodes for any TV show times 200, that means he had 600 credits. I mean, just unreal. Again, what this guy said, just such a fan. And he's still working today. Like he's still in stuff. To this, he looks a lot older, but I've seen him show up. He's a very distinctive voice. He has a line where Potter and tells Zale and Benson, you know, if you see something, if it moves, pick it up. You know, basically, I want this camp spotless. And Benson mounts off and says, "You can't heap all this on us." Which, again, read the room, Benson. From what you've seen of Colonel Potter, what makes you think he is in any mood for a sergeant to disobey an order from a colonel? Like, really?
And I don't care. Like, we know we're going to say in a minute, you know, what he's revealed to truly be. But even then, he would know not to, like, try to talk to his commanding officer that way. he would know. Matter of fact, he is there, as we're going to talk about in a few minutes. He's there because people aren't following the rules and they feel discipline is going down at the 4077. But then in that moment, he is actually doing what he is saying is wrong with the 4077.
Right. Yeah, exactly. what a dick this guy is, which we'll learn about that more often. So then Hawkeye and BJ come in and they say, you know, we demand to talk about it. You've got to talk about it. And Potter barks, "Got to get out of here." And then BJ has an absolutely great line where he just says, very unafraid, "Who do you think you're talking to? A couple of strangers?" I love that line. I love it. Yeah. I love because it's, you know, we've talked about this in other episodes. Once you've kind of crossed that Rubicon with certain people, you have a familiarity with them that can't be, you can't pretend that it's not there anymore. And when someone pulls that on you, you're kind of like, "Hey, come on. Like, what are we talking about? Yeah, I know you too well." It reminds me, I remember hearing about John Lennon used to do a thing where if he would get into a real like argument, presumably with Paul McCartney or something, but he would get into a fight with somebody. And if it got really intense, he would lower his glasses and look at you, you know, from above the lenses and go, "Hey, it's me." You know, that's just kind of little thing of like, "Hey, all right, let's." And so I love that. I love that Hawkeye BJ can talk to him like that. Like, come on. Like, let's stop pretending that you get to talk to me like this.
Yeah. What I really thought was interesting in the scene, Potter gets so mad, he threatens to get the MPs. And BJ has a great comeback where he goes, "They want to know what's wrong too." Mm-hmm. But then I started thinking, does the 4077 actually have MP stationed there? Because, I mean, not counting Klinger, that's a whole other thing. But I'm like, I know back when we had the Olympics episode, those MPs are hanging out at Rosie's Bar to help flip the Jeep or the ambulance, but they weren't from the 4077. They were just visiting. And I was like, I don't think the 4077 has MPs.
They seem to have them when they need them.
When they need them.
Yeah. You know? Or yeah. Cause yeah, there's generally, cause you're right. You would think if they had MPs, they would be guarding the supplies there where that where the penicillin doesn't get stolen and stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah, they kind of just show up when they need him to. And so Potter tells them what's happened, and Radar, of course, is spying and listening in. He, as Potter leaves, he comes in and they discuss it. And I'm like, God, who would be, you know, who would do something like that? And Radar offers Klinger and they're like, no. And they go, Charles, Yes. And then we cut to them going through his footlocker, going through Charles's footlocker. And by the way, in next week's episode, Dr. Winchester, Mr. Hyde, they will go through his footlocker. So this is 2 weeks in a row where they're just like, oh, to hell with it. We're just going through the footlocker. And they're going through all this stuff. And BJ puts on one of his scarves. They're going through a love letter that Hawkeye insists is a code, which BJ thinks, you know, I think you're stretching things. He puts on a captain's hat that Winchester has. I got to wonder, why does Winchester have a captain's hat? Why did that come with him to MASH? But okay. I love that BJ, as he's going through stuff, he's throwing it over his shoulder. Like, he's not even making any attempt to kind of like keep the stuff organized or anything. He's just boom, 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 you know? And then of course, Winchester barrels in and is absolutely livid. And I love that David Ogden Stiers actually manages to like get his face full of blood, where his face gets like super pink, and he's really, really furious. And there's an absolutely fantastic gag where he calls Hawkeye a jerk, and then he goes, it's come to this, I've used the word jerk. And Hawkeye goes, we're all slowing down, Charles. I love that. I love that Winchester's mad at himself for using a colloquialism. Like, that's just too unsophisticated a word. And then Hawkeye's trying to offer some sort of comfort. Well, we're all slowing down, Charles. That gag is so good. It's such a great, and it's perfectly delivered by Stiers.
Yeah, no, like, and you know what's funny? And this is something you've brought up on the show in the past, and it's something I'm definitely going to talk about towards the end of the episode, about how Hawkeye's a bit of a jerk. And I know their heart's in the right place, but I'd be ticked off if I walk into a tent and a couple of people I don't really like that much are going through my personal belongings. You know, it's like, yeah. And it kind of goes back to the Hawkeye's more of a jerk than the show wants you to think he is thing, which, like I said, I'll talk about later. But yeah, yeah, Winchester's great in that scene. I love when they have the part at the end there where he's drinking his hair.
Charles, you're drinking your hair.
Yeah. And it's a great gag to show what a great character Winchester is, because for the first five seasons, Hawkeye was always smarter than Frank, always got the better of him. And this was just another example of showing, yeah, sometimes they can get one on Charles, but sometimes Charles can get one on them without them even knowing it.
Yeah. I love that he's ahead of them. And he calls them, you petty larcenists. Just fantastic. And you're drinking your hair. Don't be ridiculous. This is 12-year-old scotch. I switched the bottles. You think I would keep it in the original bottle, you petty larcenist? And of course, Hawkeye starts going, oh, I've been drinking from his scotch bottle. So he's drinking.
But it shows you what a defined palate Hawkeye has, that he's drinking something and he thinks it's scotch.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Exactly. He doesn't notice that is. He can't discern what scotch. I drink very little scotch, my life, but I think I know the difference between that and hair tonic. But okay, I don't know. And then Winchester puts them on the correct thread, where he's like, look, if you're looking for a spy, there's probably going to be a mail sent to I-Corps. And, you know, chances are that's going to be the person you're looking for. And they're like, oh, that's actually a good idea. They go find Radar. Radar will not open the mail bag. He says, yeah, this is a federal, you know, this is official mail. And then, of course, they just say one of the letters about Colonel Potter might be in there. Why didn't you say so? And he just dumps it on the floor, obviously, without a second thought. And there's this really nice shot. Again, I mentioned this is directed by William Jurgensen, where they put the camera under Radar's desk. And so we are down on the floor as the three of them are going through all the mail. And BJ has a joke about, this is the last time I get a post office job at Christmas. And then they go through all the letters. And then they see there is one from Benson and to I-Corps. And Radar goes, oh, it's from Joe Benson. He's a regular guy. Couldn't be him. And they're like, you know, Radar, how many regular guys are sending letters to I-Corps? And Hawkeye, of course, is just going to tear it open. And Radar's like, let me do it. And he does this great bit where he runs his finger along the top of the envelope very firmly two or three times, and then snaps it open with a wrap of his fingers, and the envelope pops open without tearing it at all. And Hawkeye has this great, like, can you imagine what he could do with a scalpel?
But to go back a second to when they were in his footlocker, when Hawkeye finds a letter Charles was writing, and starts reading it, and he keeps thinking everything's in code. And it was a letter that Charles was writing some woman in Tokyo. And I started thinking, you know, one, Charles is a bit of a player, I guess. He's got women that we never see, apparently. And then I started wondering, was this a woman he just met in Tokyo in R&R? Was this a woman he was seeing when he was there 6 months prior? And she keeps bugging him and he's trying to get rid of her. So I wanted to hear more about that letter. I want to know about Charles's time in Tokyo. I would watch an episode of that.
I bet it's a woman he met while he was stationed in Tokyo. That's who it is. Because, I mean, has he gotten leave? Yeah, but I mean, it's probably somebody from his social circle.
Yeah.
Her name is Meredith. And of course, Hawkeye says, oh, it could be a code. It could be it could be the last name of a general. And that's where BJ's like, I think you're stretching it a little bit. But yeah, I mean, you know, Winchester, I'm sure in his social circle, he's probably quite the catch. He's got a lot of money. He's a renowned physician. He's highly intelligent. He's got great taste. You know, he's obnoxious to everybody at the unit, but in his own circle, he probably, you know, yeah.
And then when he recommends that they go check the mailbag, which is a great idea, but I kept thinking it's a good thing for them that day, who we know will be Benson, put a letter out in the mail. Are they just assuming he put one in the mail every day?
They never establish how fast the mail goes in or out at MASH. You know, sometimes it seems like it's forever. Other times it's like every other day. I don't know. But yeah, they got lucky. It's funny. The bag is huge. Like there's like 1,000 letters in there. Like, wow, this is like, is this Christmas time? As PJ jokes about, like, it's a lot of mail in there. So they have some brief, there's a brief scene in OR where Potter talks about, you know, I'm really not going to miss this. I'm not going to miss this place. Benson comes in and Hawkeye says, Benson, we need you after surgery. Help us out with some things. He wanders in and they start giving him grief. And they're like, you're late, Benson. And he's like, when an officer gives you an order, you better move, fella. And, you know, they're acting very un-Hawkeye and BJ like. You know, they're really kind of playing up the whole we're captains thing. And then they finally corner him and they mention that we got one of your letters. And then Benson gives it up. Potter sits down and they explain to him this, the pen in your back has got this guy's fingerprints all over it. And Potter has a whole thing about, you know, I'm too pooped for riddles. What are you talking about? Benson explains that he was sent there as a spy due to this Colonel Webster, who showed up and has had a grudge, and Hawkeye and BJ don't even know who he's talking about. Potter says, I remember he came in with a little piece of shrapnel in his butt and he got mad at me when I told him that he'd have to wait for more serious cases. And so obviously the guy's just got a grudge against Potter. And I guess he's got a lot of power that he can commandeer a spy and send him over to the unit. I mean, I don't know. I would think doesn't the army have bigger things to worry about in the middle of a war? But okay, you know, maybe not. I don't know. That's the whole bit of it. And then of course they're like, okay, but that still doesn't explain the bad reports. And Benson has a line. He says, well, you got to admit from a military perspective, things are pretty loose around here. And BJ responds with, yeah, but from a human aspect, things are plenty tight, which is again, a terrific line. Potter basically says to Benson, you know, get out of here and, you know, go tell Webster if I ever see him again, I'm going to put that shrapnel back where I found it, which is absolutely fantastic line. And, you know, that's okay. They figured out this is what's going on.
You know, you mentioned him. I didn't think about this before about Benson. Like, I know he went in there undercover, but is he actually like a spy? Is that his normal trade? Because then I started thinking, does he know Colonel Flagg?
Yeah, right, exactly.
That would have been great to see those two interact. But I also kept thinking he probably exaggerated the reports, because if he's sent in by a boss that he's probably trying to impress, and the boss says, I want you to go in there and get dirt, he's going to make up dirt. He's probably going to exaggerate things, because he's not going to come back and say, oh, everything's fine.
Yeah. Right. If you send somebody if the goal is see if there's any dirt against a guy that I don't like.
Yeah.
Yeah. We know the subtext of that is you're going to find something clearly. So, but yeah, they, you know, they send him out. And so then we cut later on, we cut back to Colonel Potter in his office and he's talking to General Kent and he says, you know, I just want my record cleaned up. You know, he's like, and call off the inspection. We have better things to do than put on our Sunday best for a bunch of dust sniffing yahoos, which is a great Colonel Potter phrase. And then, we only hear his side of the conversation and he says, am I staying? I'll get back to you. And Hawkeye and BJ and Radar are surrounding him. Hawkeye's even sitting on Potter's desk. Hawkeye is sitting some sort of desk behind him. And Potter's saying, you know, geez, I passed my prime. I probably should go home. And then Hawkeye says, look, Colonel. And then he says, Sherman. And they both exchange this little glance. And that's a great moment. I think that's a really great. I think that's the first time we've heard Hawkeye refer to Colonel Potter that way. And it's, they've crossed that line. Again, I use that phrase. They crossed the Rubicon now where that's their level of relationship that he can talk to him like that.
So this is going to sound weird, but this scene here is one of my most hated scenes in the entire series.
Whoa. Okay. Yes. Hot take. All right.
This is the reason. Yeah. When I first emailed you, I said, I don't know why, from when I was a kid, it bugged me. And even though I haven't watched a show in years, for some reason, this scene would pop in my head once in a while. Rewatching it recently. So here's my take on the scene. And I'm probably being too harsh on it, I admit. I know Radar and BJ are kind of a part of it too. But Hawkeye really brings it home. I'm like, okay, is it okay if I swear?
Sure.
Hawkeye, you asshole. You selfish asshole. Potter's been in the Army for 30 years. His family, his wife, his children, his grandchildren are all at home waiting for him. He's 4 miles from the front. I think they miss him and would love for him to come home. I know he's already half convinced himself to stay, but I'm like, because you don't want to be bothered to have to deal with a new person. What if Potter drives over a landmine a month from now? He could have been back home. But no, Hawkeye, you had to guilt him into staying because you couldn't be bothered learning, dealing with anyone else. And okay, I'm going to get a little personal. What drove it home to me watching it this time that got me more angry. So not to try to get too personal, but for years I worked as a correctional officer in a maximum security prison. I still work in corrections, but I'm in a different area now. You know, I'm not saying it's the same as work in being in a war, but you could imagine in that environment, it can be very tense, dangerous, stressful. I worked with a lot of great officers, veterans. I had a lot of respect for. I felt very safe around. When it was their time to retire, do you think I'd go up to them, even ones that were my friends, and say, you got 100 reasons to retire, but you know, why don't you stick around?
Mm.
Because I don't want to have to deal with a new guy. You know, oh yeah, I hate that. I get what they're trying to do in that scene, but and like I said, maybe I'm being too harsh, but that scene has always bothered me. I'm like, you jerk. And I know the other two are in on it too, and I know Potter's kind of half convinced himself to stay anyways. I would have preferred the scene been like him, Sherman kind of come to it on his own, him telling them, you know I miss Mildred and I know I should go home, but I don't want my career to end on a bad note like this.
Mm.
I want to finish what I start. I would like to have seen Potters do that instead. Say, no, I'm going to go out on my terms, not because some people tried to talk bad stuff about me. I would have preferred the episode ended that way, with him deciding to stay based on that, not because Hawkeye's like, Sherm, you know, stay. Anyways, that's my hot take.
That's interesting. I know what you're saying. I mean, I do wonder, like I mentioned earlier about Mildred, like, you know, Mildred's putting up with this. Did he tell Mildred that he was coming home? And then he said, no, I'm not. Like, that would make it even worse. Oh.
Well, earlier he said he was going to go write a letter because she probably would like to hear about all this. Well, I doubt she got the. I hope he didn't send that letter.
Oh, I hope not. Yeah.
And then by the time she got it, and then him call her and go, yeah, that's fine. I'm not leaving.
Yeah, that would be even worse. Yeah. Let's just assume he wrote the letter, but he never sent it. And so she never even heard about it. But I totally see your point of view. I really do. I think it would have been I know they realize they have to have all the characters involved because that's the show.
Yeah.
But I also, I could see, totally see what you're saying, that it might have been more effective if he came to that conclusion all on his own and told everybody then, as opposed to, they don't browbeat him, but they definitely play on his sympathies.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I see what you're saying. I know what you mean. It's always, anytime you're at a work, I mean, you're obviously dealing with something way more serious than most people, but anytime, you know, if somebody leaves, like if you're at a job and somebody that you really like leaves, you're always a little like, oh man, is this going to be bad for me? You know, like, yeah. you know, but you don't try and talk the guy out of the person out of leaving, you know, presumably they're leaving for a good reason. So yeah, I see what you're saying. I do. and of course, as soon as Colonel Potter makes that decision, he hears the choppers arrive and realizes, oh, he's like, I hate this place. And that's the end of our main act. And then we come back for a little button scene where everybody comes in and they're saying, this is celebrating your first day back. And it's kind of funny. We've got the whole cast in on it, including Zale, which is really the only time that they would incorporate Zale as a kind of like quasi regular. You know, this is not, yeah, he would be in a lot of episodes across the seasons. He would eventually leave in season 8, of course, but like this is the only time where it's like, oh, let's get the whole cast in. And then they had to consciously include Zale. And I almost wondered, like, did Johnny Hamer think, ooh, I'm on my way to being on the front credits or something. I don't know. It's just a very curious addition.
He probably thought he was a new Klinger. He was moving up. Klinger's going to eventually be the Radar, and he'll be the Klinger.
Perfect. Everybody moves up one slot.
Yep.
It's fantastic. So they bring in, the chef is still there. Again, this guy, how long has this guy been at the unit now? He's been 2 weeks. And he brings in the leftover derby, which has been halved already. And there's one candle left. And he says, and Potter says, I apologize to everybody for being so surly. And then he blows out the cake and everyone gives him a round of applause. And that is the end of our episode. So overall, I mean, again, aside from your criticism of the final scene, what are you know, overall thoughts on Potter's retirement?
Well, I love Potter in this episode. Yeah, I know we don't like seeing him yelling at everyone all the time, but I just love seeing that side of him. I love seeing that, you know, like you've coined the phrase, the young Sherman Potter Chronicles.
Yes.
I love that little hint when he's talking to his general friend that there's a whole background. That's, you know, once again, not to get back to it, that's why, you know, when Hawkeye's guilting him, and I'm thinking, you know how much stuff that Potter's probably been, he's been through 3 wars, you know? So, yeah,
seriously.
But anyways, I love this idea. We get a little hint of more of a background with him. I love that we get to see a different side, but it's also great. You see him over the episode calm down slowly. It's not an abrupt change. I like that by the end. I see at the end, he's shown that he really appreciates, you know, the unit and everyone, they do care about him. But overall, because I hate that final scene so much, I'm not a fan of this episode.
Okay. Wow. Okay. Really? It dragged the whole thing down for you.
Yeah.
Really?
No, there's great acting. Like you mentioned, I never thought about it till I watched it again. And then you brought up a few times. BJ actually has some great subtle lines.
He does. He's great in this one. Yeah. Yeah. I said, I think it's a really good episode. I just don't enjoy watching Potter yell at everybody. I understand that, and by the fact that I noticed that they would start doing it every single season, I got a little like, oh my god, you know, like, okay, already, you know, like, stop leaning on this so hard. And this is the first one of those. But that said, watching it over and kind of deciding what jokes I wanted to pull for, like, my favorite joke, like, there's a lot of funny lines. I mean, there is the scene with Winchester and Potter where they're yelling at each other is fantastic. It's really, really funny. And so I mentioned at the top of the show that this is Lawrence Marks's last script for MASH. He did 28 shows. He wrote episodes like Henry, Please Come Home, Cease Fire, 5 o'clock, Charlie, Carry On Hawkeye, The Incubator, Officer of the Day, Rainbow Bridge, OR. And from this season, he wrote Change Day and Potter's Retirement. I do not know why this was it. I don't know why he just couldn't keep writing for MASH. He had a lot of other TV credits, but he had a, you know, I mean, really one of the great MASH writers early on in the show's formative years. And so this is it for him. And so we wanted to make sure we give him a shout out because he wrote a lot of great stuff for the show. And so that's a perfect time to ask you, what is your favorite line or joke from the episode?
I actually really love just the way he says it when Potter and Winchester are arguing, and Potter he's just so filled with anger over everything. And he just doesn't want to deal with petty stuff. And I just love how he just, without even really looking at Winchester, he says, "Oh, this is a commemorative meeting. If it goes well, we'll issue a coin." just the way he angrily says that. His delivery is perfect. So that's probably my favorite joke or line of the episode.
That is a great gag. Yeah. If it goes, this is a commemorative meeting. If it goes well, we'll issue a coin. So yeah, that's absolutely fantastic. I would have loved to have seen that commemorative coin, by the way. My favorite line is when Hawkeye and BJ and Radar are going through all the mail and they're looking for the suspicious letter. And Hawkeye finds one. He says, "Here's one from Klinger to his draft board." And BJ goes, "Is it ticking?" Great. Yeah. I mean, BJ gets a bunch of great stuff.
Yeah.
Great gags and some great serious lines. So yeah, there's really, really funny stuff in the show. So, well, that is Potter's retirement, everyone. Thank you so much, Brad, for coming on.
Thanks. No, I really appreciate it. I hope I didn't sound too negative there towards the end. It is a good episode. Like I said, I just got personal issues with that last part, but it is a well-made episode. And yeah, thanks for having me on the show. This has been great.
Absolutely. Why don't you tell people where they can find you out on the internet?
Well, you can probably find me on Twitter or X or whatever they're going to call it next week. My name, Brad Dade. I don't really post a lot. I mostly comment on other people's posts. So that the only other place, I don't know if they're still available, but years ago, I used to co-host a podcast with the talented Mike Day. It was called The Hornet's Nest. It was all about the Green Hornet. That was from years ago. Mike ran the show and he allowed me to co-host with them. I'm not sure if those episodes are still available, but if they are somewhere in the interwebs, please enjoy.
Well, I've never seen it, but just quick, pro or con that movie with Seth Rogen. Was that any good as a Green Hornet fan? Okay. Got it. Understood. So, well, anyway, Brad, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it. And thank you all for listening. Of course, you can find this show over on Twitter or X, or as Brad said, whatever it's called, at MASH477Cast. You can find all the back episodes on the website, FireAndWaterPodcast.com. You can subscribe to the show on any podcatcher of your choice. And if you want to support Fire and Water Podcast Network, just go to Patreon.com/FWPodcast, where you can unlock various awards, one of which is to be name-checked on a show of your choice. So a big salute to Daniel Ulrich, Nicholas Prom, Russell Burbage, Stan Peel, Mike Thomas, Joe Perino, Billy Shulman, Dennis Bailey, Kara Kay, Tim English, Adam Ackerman, Lisa P., Laura Braun, Stefan Van Skyke, Michael Kelly, Daryl Clark, and Brady Palmer. Really appreciate all the support from MASHcast, everybody. So we will see you next week. But until then, that is all.
It is 6 months to the day since I was shanghaied into this quagmire.
Congratulations, and this is a commemorative meeting. If it goes well, we'll issue a coin.